Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Mile High Five podcast. I'm Doug Cunnington and Kristen Knapp is joining me today. How are you?
So good. It's so good to see you as always, Doug. Lovely to be here today.
And we've been chatting here for about, I don't know, it seems like 45 minutes because we had some technical issues.
We did. Kristen had some technical issues. Let's be real.
And it's, I mean, it happens. I've had issues here where it's like, I haven't touched anything. Everything's the same. And then when I go to turn everything on to record, something's off. And so it's always fun to have technology working against you, but that's a good expectation to have. It's just, most things are not going to work most of the time.
Yeah, it's like I could hear you fine. And then when I went to fix the microphone, then I couldn't hear you anymore. So it is what it is. We're going to make it work.
Today, we're going to talk about learning how to spend money. And it's interesting because the, you know, the five movement and some of the sort of frugality habits that we have, we worked really hard to get to that point, and maybe we had credit card debt or we would just buy things without thinking about it. And then we really locked in those frugality habits. And then some of us are at a point where maybe we oversaved and we're trying to think, okay, how can we spend money at the, in air quotes, sort of like the right level? And we're going to talk about testing that out a little bit. I was inspired for this episode from Brandon, Mad Fiantist. So he doesn't publish episodes very often. And it's very exciting when I see a new episode pop up in my feed from Brandon. And he published this mid-November 2025. And basically, he's talking about ways that he's been testing, like spending a little bit more money. And he's worked at it for years in sort of a classic situation of like oversaving, really strong frugality habits. And then he's trying to figure out how to unwind that and again, sort of have an appropriate level of spending for maybe his net worth and his family and what he's trying to do. So Kristen, I asked you to check out this episode and we're going to hit some of the stuff that he talked about, but we'll have our own stories and our own experiences. But would you describe yourself as a frugal person? And I'll just leave it open and you could set the time frames or however you want to answer that.
Obviously, Brandon has some issues with spending. I mean, that's why he did the episode. But I do wonder, like, is this a problem for most people in the FI community when they hit FI? Like, I don't think it's going to be a problem for me. Here's the thing, to be honest, like, I'm not at a place where I'm spending down yet. So I don't know what that's going to feel like. I still work part-time. But in general, I don't feel like I have a problem spending because I wonder... I was thinking about this when I was listening to the episode yesterday. I don't know that I'm as like hardwired to be super frugal as a lot of other people in the community are because I came to this through, you know, poverty and like having to be super frugal to survive. So I spent all of my 20s robbing Peter to pay Paul, you know, like, oh, I've got $40 left on this credit card before I hit the max and 20 on this one and, you know, paying minimums every month and just trying to keep my head above water. So I spent, you know, a lot of time then just trying to get out of debt. I was 30, about 30 years old, I think, when I got my first job that actually allowed me to start really paying down that debt. And during that time frame, I was super conscientious of every single spend, budgeted to the dollar, you know, very careful with all of that. But once I got out of that debt, which I got to at about age 35. So once I buckled down and, you know, had a lot of money to start throwing at it, it took me about 5 years. Once I got out of that debt and was able to establish an emergency fund of a few months, couple things. One, that was the first time in my life I've ever felt any sort of peace around money, like able to sleep at night. Thank God for that. But also, I really kind of loosened up after that. And this idea that you would still be so super frugal, like all the way to FI. I mean, you know, it takes a while to get there. I can't imagine being that super frugal, like all the way. And even after you hit FI, I mean, I think that's why we have these things that have come along like slow FI, right? Like really living your life along the way and enjoying your money without being crazy, obviously, but spending on our values. And I don't have any trouble spending on my values. I mean, if you've listened to me on your show before, I love travel. I spend on travel. Now, am I paying cash to fly business class everywhere? No. I use points. You know, I still feel like I make wise financial decisions, but this idea that you're super miserly all the way, and then even still after you hit FI and you've got millions in the bank that you have trouble spending, I just don't think that's going to be an issue for me, because honestly, it's not an issue now.
That makes a lot of sense to me. I feel like I have some frugal tendencies, and definitely like to get a deal, like to save money when I can. However, I do like buying stuff, and I think it's interesting. You know, you think of your household growing up and some of the influences, and it could even be like on TV or something like that, things that you see and things that you're influenced by, similar to you. I'm like, I think I'm okay spending money. I don't have as big of an issue as for some people and the issues that they run into. And I encourage people to check out Brandon's episode over on Mad Fiancist, and we'll link up. I'll mention a couple of the highlights, so it'll give us some things to chat about. We're not going to cover everything here today, but he mentions how to reframe expenses and recalibrate how you value money. And actually, had Brandon on the show a few years ago, and we talked about this, where we have a certain value of like $20 and maybe it locked in when we were in college or some point in time. And $20 is different for us in our net worth than it was when we were in college, but we treat it the same and we evaluate things with that same frame of mind. And I've gotten better, but I still have some issues with it. Another point he mentions was just inefficiencies as your net worth grows. And maybe, I mean, really, as you're like testing things, and I'll have a couple stories that we could talk about around that. One fun thing is he mentions splurge accounts and forced annual spending targets. And
I love that. Yeah.
That's cool. And we're not going to get into it deep, but have you done that before?
I haven't, but you know, we talk to people in the community, like Mark Troutman's famous for his fun bucket, right? Same thing. And I love the idea. I don't know that he does this, but I've heard other people say, you know, if you give yourself a set amount to spend, and whatever you haven't spent by the end of the year, you have to, you know, give it away. I've heard some people say you have to give it to your least favorite political party. That way you make yourself spend that money, because what's the point dying the richest man in the graveyard, right?
Right. Another one is the importance of prioritizing now over the future while still spending and saving for both. And this is an interesting one, because when you're on the journey to FI, it's planning for the future and you're thinking about that. You're always kind of prioritizing your future self. But at some point, you know, the future's now and you need to start doing something with it. Maybe not in your case, but for some people, they're still accumulating while they should be like making those accounts get a little smaller over time. And I mean, if you reach a certain point, it's just going to snowball out of control. Really, obviously, great problem to have if your compound interest has really taken over and you can't keep up with the spending. But at that point, you probably need to look at some of the ideas that we're going to talk about today. So
I just think it's so important to find a balance along the way. You know, I mean, there's no reason to deprive yourself while you're getting there. And, you know, the movement has certainly pivoted toward this in recent years. There's been a lot more talk of that. I mean, early on, it was definitely like living in grandma's basement, living on rice and beans and getting to FI as quick as possible, right? So now we're enjoying ourselves along the way, but just making wise financial decisions, you know? Mm-hmm. But let me ask you, I mean, kind of back to what I said at the start, do you feel like spending is a problem for the majority of people that you know after they hit FI? I mean, obviously, Carl, he's been on the show a lot talking about that. I know it was an issue for him, and that's something they've worked on. But like in general, do you think it's the majority?
I'm thinking of like Camp FIs and other places and some of the conversations. So I think it's probably in the middle. So what a safe answer. It's probably 50-50. But and obviously, there's no surveys. There's no way to know this. But just I do know people are like emphasizing savings, and it's still, or not saving, but just not spending as much money and having lower expenses. And that was definitely a theme. Even, you know, when I got started with the podcast and everything and attending events, that was 2021. So that's only a few years ago. And I could feel like a big shift where people are like, oh yeah, we should spend a little bit more. And we're learning from people like Mark and Kevin and some other folks that are several years ahead. And they're like, we kind of oversaved and we're like trying to step up our spending because we have a decade of retirement and we see we need to spend a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And we did the same planning that you all are doing. And maybe you do need to ratchet up your spending or figure out the mechanisms where you feel comfortable. And I think maybe it's like 50-50 because there are people that are like, maybe they're not doing as much stuff as they could, or they're still trying to get like the best deal when they should potentially just relax. And actually, I have a good example where people do so many things on their own instead of just paying someone to maybe, I don't know, clear the snow. It's snowing out there today. So clear the snow or whatever, which is a poor example because I literally shoveled my own snow. But the point is people can use their money to make their life a little bit easier while also helping small businesses in their community. So eating out like this is classic small business if you're not going to a chain. And there are, again, just tons of small businesses. And I'm like, oh, it's great to spend money locally. And yeah, I could probably do some of that stuff myself, but maybe it's a little bit easier to do that. And it helps other people out in the community. So
unless you really enjoy it though, like if you really enjoy it, great. But if not, yeah, you can pay the neighborhood kid to do it. It's knocking on your door.
Perfect. Yeah. Yeah. And of course, yeah, if some people really like it, they could do it, but there are probably a lot of ways that you can like help someone's business by just like using their business, even if it's not the best value for you. And you could test it out. And maybe you're like, I don't really think I got much out of that and don't do it again. But I think testing like where you spend money is really important. Okay. And I'll ask you the same question. So do you think people need some encouragement in spending? Because you're around, you go to so many events and have so many conversations. So what's your observation?
There's definitely people who, I mean, I can think of a few, I'm not going to mention names, that have, you know, millions of dollars in the bank and they still go out of their way to do the cheaper option of whatever it is, like inconvenience themselves because something's a little cheaper. And I don't get it. I don't get it. I would have done that when I was broke as a joke. But, you know, now that, you know, I don't have debt and I have some money to spend, I will gladly pay for convenience. You know, I'm never going to drive a luxury car. I'm never going to live in the fanciest neighborhood in a big house that I don't need. Like, I just think that's silliness. But I feel like as long as you've got the big ones down, the big set costs, right? The transportation, the housing, and you've got those set costs down, whatever's left, Paula Pant, what does she call it? You might be able to help me with that. Her budget, her like anti-budget budget. What's it called? Do you remember? Do you know off the top of your head?
That sounds right. Anti-budget budget?
I don't know. If you listen at all, you know what I'm talking about. And I like what she does because it's pretty much what I do. Like early on, I budgeted to the dollar, like the categories and all of that kind of stuff. But then once I got the debt paid off and had my, you know, emergency fund set up, then I basically just make sure that I've got enough going where it needs to go into the different retirement accounts and so on and so forth to get me to my goal. And then anything that's left over, I have to spend in whatever way I see, you know, that I want to spend in. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, make sure the money's going to the right places and then whatever's left, have fun, right? So that's kind of where I am right now. And then obviously when I stop working, the extra money isn't going into the accounts, right? And there's just more money for me to spend. Yay. I'm kind of excited about that, frankly. I really don't think I'm going to have an issue. But I do think that I'm always going to, like, I don't see any reason to spend $1,000 on a handbag when I can spend $100. And I don't know if that's being frugal. I think that's just being smart. Some might disagree. Like, I just think that's silliness. You know, I'm never going to wear designer clothes, but that's also my values. I guess everybody's values are different. I will always spend on travel, but at the same time, you know, I use points to try to bring down the price a little bit. But I also enjoy doing the points thing. I mean, if you hate that, if you think it's tedious and travel brings you value, spend away if you've got it, right? Did I answer your question?
Yeah, I think so. And it, I mean, what it comes down to is like some individuals are going to need a little bit more of a push because they have like ingrained habits, or I mean, there could be external factors too, where like if their family sees them with a very expensive handbag, then that could be an issue. Even if they really like it, they don't want to have that external friction, I guess. So yeah, I think you answered. And again, everyone's a little bit different and they'll have their own struggles. So let's hit.
I think in recent years, you know, Ramit Sethi's come along with, you know, with his books and talks about spend on the things that bring you joy, the things that you love, and just cut all the other BS, right? And I think that's really important. And then also, of course, Bill Perkins with Die with Zero, that's been a really great read. You know, back to that whole, what's the point of being the richest guy in the graveyard, right? So now, the math of actually having to figuring out how to die with zero, I don't know that I figured that out yet, but I've got time. I'm not there yet.
Yeah. And I remember maybe Carl and I were talking about how much we liked the book and it really had an impact on us. And someone was like, well, I don't want to die with zero. And I'm like, just take the points from the book that you find useful. And you can, it's more of a, it's an outlook. It's not a literal thing. It's a good title. But yeah, some people are a little too literal with it. Or, I mean, honestly, a lot of books, I mean, not everything's great in them, but you just have to take what works for you at the time. And people, they may not like certain things at a certain time in their life, but a different phase, it totally makes sense. So those books are great. Let's talk about the reframing the expenses really quickly and as an exercise so people can think about this on their own. But yeah, it's that $20 value that you had for $20 when you were in college or younger or in debt or whatever. And then we're treating it the same. So at this point where maybe our net worth is many, many times greater than it was, but we're still thinking like, oh, should I spend $20 on getting an Uber or should I try to walk in the rain to this thing? And some people are still evaluating $20 the same way and they should maybe just get the Uber because it's way more convenient. Or actually parking is another thing where it's like, oh, someone's going to park farther away in maybe a less safe area, or it's just worse in several ways. And they're going to try to save $5. And it, like, I'm just thinking like, oh, have I done that? Have I done that recently? Cause I'm like, oh, I'm not going to pay $20. But yeah, we've kind of flipped on that where it's like, if it's clearly more convenient, do that. And we've recalibrated in many ways. So have you done this on your own or have you?
I can think of an example where I was with people who drove around for a very long period of time looking for much cheaper parking. And I'm just, at some point I started to be like, I'll pay, let's just park already, you know? Yeah. So like I said, I'm happy, I will pay for convenience. Now look, 20 years ago, no. But now when I have all of my stuff taken care of, you know, like I said, I'm not sitting on a huge pot of multi-millions here, but I've got my emergency fund in the bank, you know, my savings is in order and whatever's left is left and I can spend whatever on the parking, you know, I'm not going to go out and, you know, a $10,000 expenditure, that's a different story, but parking. Yeah. I'm to save myself a 30-minute walk or 45 minutes of driving around. I'm in.
The other, we'll start talking about a couple little travel things here. Cause I just got back from a road trip. We enjoy road trips. Our dog Georgie rides with us. So that's one of the reasons why we drive. But food is more expensive, like no matter where you're, I mean, inflation, we're all becoming older each second. So I'm like an old man. I'm like, oh, I remember when I used to be able to get a whatever at this cost, a whatever, a taco from Taco Bell.
Back in my day.
And, you know, I forget the restaurant, but it was at one of the travel centers. And I got like one of their fancier quesadillas. And I think it was like $20 or something. And wow. Like, it's at a gas station, right? Basically. I mean, they're nicer than the old gas stations, but I was like, man, super convenient. It was actually really good. But at the same time, I'm like, oh man, like I've come a long way to be able to do that versus in the past, I would get like, whatever the 29-cent McDonald's hamburger Do you remember those deals? It's like, oh,
no.
so gross.
I must have missed out.
Yeah. I think, again, like the cheeseburgers were 39 cents and maybe it was only like one day. Yeah. And I was like in college. I remember I was like, wow, this is amazing. I think it was a limit of 10. So I bought like 10 and I was like, this is great. So gross. I put it in my fridge and like ate it every meal for the next couple few days there. So gross.
You know, I think the example that Brandon gave was interesting. He basically took that, you know, I think he was using an example of like $10. Like back in the day, he'd be like, oh, it's more than $10. I don't know. But he also didn't have much of a net worth back then. So he divided that into what his net worth was back then to see what percentage of the net worth was he was spending and got that percentage and multiplied it by his net worth today to see what that number is. And it was way more than $10, right. Which that example, you know, is helping him be able to spend a lot more and not think about the $10 purchases anymore. He didn't say what the number is now where he starts considering, but it's a lot more.
You helped me get started with the credit card points and just getting a card here and there. So I've been doing that and it's working out well. And I just booked some travel in the Chase portal. I think I had a credit in there, and then you earn more points if you book within the portal. And there's some reviews in there of the hotels. And again, we're on a road trip. We stayed at Days Inn and the reviews weren't great. And again, road trip. So we're really just like, we're there for a few hours. We're not there for very long. So it's just like overnight, we show up, say around dinner time, and we leave very early in the morning. Anyway, this one was a little bit rough and it was the first days. So I knew if we were going to stay in a bad place, that was probably the best day to do it. The first place we're going to stay. Anyway.
Did you know it was going to be like that? Were the reviews bad and you still booked it anyway?
Unfortunately, yes. So
what?
Lesson learned on this. So, and we learned it quickly, by the way. So I was like, you know what? It'll probably be fine. I've stayed in like, and we have stayed in like some crappier places just because it's harder to find a place that allows pets. So that is typically our limiting factor and the biggest constraint.
So there weren't any other options?
Correct. Yeah. In the area that we were looking. Yeah. So it was like, yep, there were no others. However, in hindsight, I was like, we should have stayed in a different part of town. So, you know, one thing on a road trip, I'm like, I don't want to go like 5 miles away from the highway. I kind of went right by the highway, by the gas station. We can get in and get out quickly. So anyway, I didn't have as big of an issue with like, it hasn't been renovated in like 40 years or something like that. So it looked a little rough in some places, but the big thing, we saw a roach in the bathroom. Like as soon as we got there, I killed it, took care of it. We didn't talk about it again until we like got out of there the next morning. It was like an unspoken thing. And then Elizabeth actually, she had booked the place on the way back because she got a card. She had a credit. So she was booking the one on the way back. And she was like, I canceled it. And we ended up rebooking places. So we learned quickly and we were like, fuck all of that. Like, we're not going to get like, it's a brand new place. And other places we stayed, it was like a brand new La Quinta, which is not a high-end hotel, but it was brand new. The people were super nice. And I was actually surprised. It was nicer. It was a lot nicer than I expected it to be. Really nice gym in there. And then everything else, like it was either a freshly renovated place or nice. Brand new. And Good. Because we don't want to run into any issues. And a roach could be anywhere, honestly. I mean, a newer place is a lot less likely because I think they seal it up a little bit better. Yeah, that was just in the last week. And we're like, okay, like we don't need to stay. And we're already getting a credit. We could use points. There's no fucking reason to stay at a place where we're like, this is not awesome.
I mean, maybe when you were in college, right? Let's be real.
But yeah,
now,
yeah.
You can do better. I'm not ever going to stay at a four. Well, I say never. I think it's highly unlikely that I will ever pay to stay at a Four Seasons or a Ritz-Carlton or something like that because I personally don't see the value. Look, as long as it's clean and well-located, got good reviews, I'm pretty content.
Yeah. Yeah. And on the travel topic, I got some other stuff, but You do Five Friends Travel. Can you just give us a little rundown on what that is if people haven't heard of it yet?
Yeah. So at the end of the day, like, I love to travel. There's a big world out there to see, right? And I like to travel more than my husband. So he does go with me a couple times a year. We'll do some domestics or something like that. But he's not into more of the international travel or the really exotic stuff. Like a few years ago when I told him I wanted to go to Egypt, he's like, why? Go with your friends. I'm like, all right. So, you know, I put a group together of a few friends. And at this point, most of my friends are five people. So now that I'm part-time, I want to travel more. I mean, I'm not getting any younger. So, you know, I love hanging out with five people. I mean, I go to these camps and conferences. That's mainly why. I love, they're my tribe, right? I mean, I'm not kidding you when I say finding this community is really the first time in my life I ever felt like I really fit in. Like, these are my people. So I love hanging out with them and I love to travel. My husband doesn't want to go with me to all the places. So it just made sense to put groups of five people together to go on these trips. So at the end of the day, I'm planning epic trips that I want to go on and inviting all of my friends, which is the five community. So I have a website, fivefriendstravel.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Instagram, same handle. At this point, we've gone to Portugal together. We spent a couple weeks in Morocco together. Super epic, amazing. And I leave in less than a week from today to do our first river cruise. We're going to go visit the Christmas markets on the Danube between Vienna and Nuremberg. That'll be my first river cruise. I think everybody going on it, it's their first river cruise. So we'll see how that goes. We've got another one coming up in April with Avalon during tulip time, where we're going to visit. It's round trip Amsterdam, but we'll be in the Netherlands and Belgium. Going to be doing a lot of beer tasting on that one. We've got a big group going on that one. And then what else is next year? We've got Turkey in June. So we're going to visit Istanbul, Ephesus, and Cappadocia, stay in a cave hotel. It looks really cool. So that's in early June. And then we're taking, oh my gosh, this one blew my mind. We're going on safari in Tanzania in October. And that one sold out in less than 24 hours. We're actually doing 2 weeks back to back, a la Camp Fi, to try to accommodate everybody. And we still sold out in less than 24 hours. But for anything that sold out, you can message me. I can get you on a waiting list. But it's been awesome. I love it so much. I feel like the way it came together was so organic, but I feel like it's just what I was meant to do. And it brings me so much joy. I love it so much. So I'm already looking ahead to 2027. I sent out an email to all my email subscribers, which do that. Go to fivefriendstravel.com and sign up for emails. You'll find out when I launch new trips. I have about 900 people on that list now. And I sent them an email a few weeks ago and said, here's 12 places. Where would you consider going in 2027? And a lot of people voted. And Japan was number one. It blew my mind. I wasn't expecting that, but I guess we're going to Japan. Well, we are. I mean, I am the top three that you guys voted for is where we're going to go in 2027. And Japan was number one. So after the Christmas holidays, I'm going to start digging in on planning that one.
Very cool.
It's a lot of fun. I'm really excited.
Yeah. So people should go and sign up over there and then they'll know when things are planned and all that kind of thing. And you said something key, which is to check with you if something is listed as sold out. Cause thing is, like, people book this like really far in advance. Sometimes things come up and they're unable to go for some reason. And it's good to be on the waiting list so that you could jump in if that opportunity pops up.
Yeah. There's an option to message me on the website. I'm pretty easy to find.
Yeah. And cool. And I'll give a plug for this podcast. So Mile High Fi is brought to you by the supporters over at Buy Me a Coffee. And I encourage you to go over there and check it out. You get a little bit of extra content, but the big thing is, unfortunately, it costs a decent amount to run the show as I keep getting payments that I have to make for different software that I'm using. So it's at least, I think, $1,200 just on the software per year, which was a little more than I was expecting. Anyway, you can go and check it out. There's no ads. I don't run ads over on YouTube. There's no ads on the show anymore. So if you like the show and you wanted to stick around, make sure you go and check it out. You could do a one-time donation. You can join for a year. But I'm trying to figure out how to make this work and be self-sustaining so it doesn't cost money. In the best case scenario, I'll be able to, like, pay for producer Chris to go to like economy. Like you're going to economy, right?
Yeah, definitely. Met Chris at economy.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like back in the day, I had another side of my business that I was just floating this, and Carl and I would cover the cost and all that. And at this point, it's nice not having a sponsor, but at the same time, it'd be cool because Chris volunteers. I don't pay him anything. He literally volunteers and
does the Chris.
Yeah, production for free. And it'd be cool to be able to pay for, you know, some stuff like that, but at least to cover the cost. So if you can spare a few bucks, head over to Buy Me a Coffee. There's a link in the description. So
also, I would just like to add just the fact that you don't have to listen to ads. Totally worth the cup of price of a cup of coffee, right? And also, you've got a lot of listeners, and we don't want the show to go away. And if he's having to spend a bunch of money to produce this thing and is negative out of pocket, please, we don't want the show to go away. Help.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah. And you know what? I did a lot of asking and selling and marketing for my other side of the business that I used to run. It's fine. I don't have an issue with it, but I don't do it much over here. The other side, like you mentioned, not having ads is pretty good. I listen to a lot of other shows, not in the FI space, but there's a lot of fucking ads out there and they're really bad. And I literally, like one business model is to turn on ads and just have whatever, like gambling ads on here, or whatever kind of shitty ads they want to put on, and then charge money on the Buy Me a Coffee to get it ad free. Like that is literally a business model to like have tons of ads and then like have people pay. And then I get paid on both ends. It's a big enough show. Like
and honestly, I don't know that anybody would blame you for doing it because you shouldn't have to pay out of pocket to do this, but we don't want that. So please go buy him a coffee.
All right. Thank you for those messages there. And let's talk more travel. So you mentioned that you use points a lot to just offset it. Have you sort of like slowly like raised the bar of like the level of amenities and hotel?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Tell us about that.
Well, early on, you know, I was happy just to get like a domestic flight, right? And then I remember the first time I used points to book an international flight, which was like, wow. And then I moved up to my first international business class booking. And now I'm spoiled rotten. I don't always fly business class. I try to fly business class now only on international flights and only on the way there, because those are usually it's overnight, right? And you want to try to sleep. I usually will suffer an economy on the way back because then I can come home and sleep for a few days or whatever. I just got my best redemption ever, and I'm so proud. I have to tell you about it. The safari I was telling you about that we're going to in October, it's a long way to get to Tanzania. And I was able to book, I don't know if it's Qatar or Qatar, but Qatar Airlines, you've probably heard of them. They have what is widely considered the best business class in the air. It's called Q Suites. So it actually like has a door and it blocks you off like in a little pod. And I booked Q Suites over there. So I think it's what leg? Not every leg is Q Suites, but I think the leg from JFK to Doha is in Q Suites. It's like 12 or 13 hours overnight. And I got that for 85,000 points plus a couple hundred dollars, maybe $200 or $300 in taxes and fees. I was able to transfer my Amex points over there. And I looked it up to see what the cash price was of that flight. And it was something like $7,000. So if you do the math, it was something like 7 cents per point that I got out of that, which Holy is my cow. my best redemption ever. I was so excited. But I literally booked that on the day that those seats were released. So it was like knowing when Qatar like releases flights, how many days in advance. And different airlines, I mean, they're usually 11 to 12 months in advance. So a lot of times to get the best redemptions with the best routings for the lowest points cost, you really have to do them, you know, 11 or 12 months out.
That's really cool. Yeah, I've seen like travel YouTubers like give a review on those. It looks super cool. And you said it's like a 12 or 13 hour leg.
Yeah, yeah. And then it's another 8 or 9 hours from Doha into Kilimanjaro Airport in Tanzania. And that's just in the regular business class, because I guess they don't have Q Suites on every plane. But I was able to get it on the way back as well. So I cheated. I know I said I usually fly economy home, but found it for 85,000 points. And I was like, you know what? I've got the points. I'm just going to do it. So I did it. So this is the first time business class round trip ever. First time for me.
Very cool. That's awesome. Yeah, I haven't gone to that level, but I do get the little bit of extra leg room. I'm not doing any international flights coming up or in recent history. So yeah, just having like a little extra leg room.
So like premium economy domestics, yeah. Is that what you do? I haven't even done that yet. For my domestics, I always just do regular economy, but maybe I need to start thinking about upgrading that.
One of the silly stresses, I'm not the only one, but just being able to put your carry-on in the overhead bin and being able to like board a little early, I'm like, that's worth it to me. And I think...
How do you guarantee that? What do you do?
Well, usually you're like zone two.
Oh, got you. By booking premium economy. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah, yeah. Typically you are. And then usually, I mean, it doesn't 100% guarantee because some people just put their bag like at the front of the plane and then they sit in the back. Yeah, yeah. And it doesn't make sense. The other thing is like when people just put like a backpack or they put their jacket up there.
So annoying.
I've definitely, in the last couple of years, perhaps I've gotten more bold, but I'm like, oh, whose bag is this? And then I give it to him.
Stick it under your feet.
Yeah, I'm like, get the fuck out of here, man. This a little,
they
like,
put you.
It. Yeah.
They say over and over. They're like, put your roller bags up here and anything else put under the seat.
Yeah. And it's like, you could definitely fit way. Anyway, so I was like, yeah, I don't care where you put it, but I'm putting my bag up there.
Pulling your bag out and saying, whose is this? How has that worked for you?
I think I've done it twice and they took their stuff.
Really? Okay. Cause I could see that causing like an air rage incident.
Yeah, it totally. I'm not sure why. Maybe they know that they're not supposed to put their fucking jacket up there. Like, put it in your lap or whatever. So
I don't have the nerve. Maybe someday, but good for you.
Yeah, you're totally right. It could lead to a confrontation, but I'm like, whose is this? I think, yeah. So it's good for me to board early to avoid a situation that I want to be in. Okay. So we mentioned the splurge accounts before and forced annual spending targets. And in our budget, Elizabeth and I, we have a fun line item. And it's nothing too huge, but it's like the no questions asked, you know, you can spend that. So it's not exactly the same as how Mark sets it up, his fund, which I believe, if I understand it correctly, he kind of pulled aside a lump sum, like a big chunk that he allocated for the fun spending.
Yeah.
And it was on top of whatever he already had. So it was like just the extra money that he had accumulated. And basically he was like, oh, I'll have this fund for the next few years. So it's literally a huge amount. And then you can section it off however you want. And he's gone on cruises and some other more expensive travel. Things.
Yeah, really fancy stuff.
We do have that line item, but it presents a couple like little problems for me because as we talked about, I don't have an issue spending. And one of the things that I've been getting into is like guitars and amplifiers. Like many things, you can get cheap or cheaper economic where it fits into this budget, but also there's more expensive ones where it's maybe like instead of a few $100 amp, it's like a few $1,000. And I've found that I enjoy this musical equipment and usually making it work in different ways. So it's not just like having the thing, but I'm playing music with it. Usually it's social. So I'm like, I feel like I have a couple wins. And fortunately, unfortunately, I haven't reached the limit where I'm like, oh, that is as good as I want my amp to be. I'm like, oh, maybe a better one, even though I just need to practice more. all that to say, we haven't done the forced spending targets where it's like, if you haven't reached your allocation for a certain thing, then you have to do something else with it. So, yeah.
How are you deciding? I mean, how are you deciding whether to get the lesser expensive amp that's in your line item for the month or the fancier one that, like, if you can afford it, I would say get it. But, like, how are you deciding?
So, a couple things in there, which I'll have to mince words here. So part of it is I typically buy used stuff. So it's like what is available at the time when I'm looking. So I did get an amp recently and I was like lightly aware of it. And I was like, I think it's a reasonable deal and it looks like it'll probably hold its value. So those are two criteria that I'm looking at, which are kind of independent from like if it's in the budget or whatever, as far as like the large purchases. And basically, it's just, will this fit into my monthly line item of the fund? And I can pull it together. So if I don't spend anything for a few months, then I'm like, oh, I've saved money in my fund, which I think is kind of against the spirit of this, where I'm like, oh, I want to save money in my fund so I could buy something bigger. Maybe it's a good habit. So anyway, it's that. In my head, for a lot of the amps or the guitars, typically those are going to hold some value. Again, if you get them used, higher end stuff tends to hold its value pretty well. Versus like if I was into cars potentially don't hold their value very well, especially if you're like getting a new one that's not a collectible kind of situation. It's not going to hold its value. It's going to depreciate, and then you could spend a lot of money over time that way. But with the guitars, it's like, even if I was like, I need to get rid of some of these, probably not going to lose any money. If so, it's going to be like a small percentage and I got okay, to enjoy this equipment. Yeah.
Who cares if it's going to hold its value? At the end of the day, if it brings you joy, if that's the one thing that you really want to spend money on, I say go for it. Like, I think you're getting kind of bogged down a little bit in the like, oh, it'll hold its value and I'm not losing anything on it. It's fine. Perfect. It brings you joy. Yeah. The joy offsets any money you would lose on it, I think. That's
perfect example. Choice. Yeah, yeah. Perfect example. And this goes into potentially the inefficiencies and waste that you have. It's not inefficiencies and waste. It's like, if I enjoy this thing, it's a good thing to spend money on. So, good point. All right.
I hope you don't mind I'm pushing on you a little bit today.
No, that's perfect. This is good. Well, it's hard to get past our, like the mentality where I'm like, oh yeah, if I buy this thing, I want to make sure. It's like, does it matter that much?
Why do you think you're that way? Like, I know why I'm that way because of what I came from, right? And growing up poor and just being like, I will not be poor. I've got to figure this out, right? But why do you think you're this way?
In this situation, I think there might be two things, but one of them is like finding a good deal. Cause I do enjoy I'm looking on like Craigslist, Facebook Marketplace, and like, oh, is this like undervalued for some reason? So I think I find something enjoyable about like buying something that might be a little undervalued and then maybe improving it a little bit or hanging on to it. And then like, oh, it validates that I did find something that was kind of cool that people didn't appreciate. So I think part of it is that. And then the other part of it is like the constraints of the budget that I'm working with. Because basically, you know, if we look at the numbers, it's like, oh yeah, I could buy an expensive amp that costs a few thousand dollars and it probably will make zero difference in the long run at all. So,
yeah.
So I don't know why.
A little bit more hardcore about it. I can think of an example a few years ago, caused a big fight with me and my husband. He wanted to get a new bike. And I'm like, what's wrong with your bike? Like, just get a tune up. Your bike's fine. What a waste. It's not broken. Right. He was so mad at me. He's like, we have this much money. Like, what are you doing? And that was kind of around the time. Cause really when that Die With Zero came out and the whole community kind of started pivoting around this idea of like, it's okay to spend money on things that bring you joy. I just recognized, I'm like, he loves going out and riding on his bike. It's okay. He's not spendy. He hardly spends any money at all. Let him get the damn bike. So I was really apologetic about it, but I've definitely pivoted more in recent years toward that being okay with spending on things that bring you joy idea. Mm-hmm.
All right. Good points. So let's get towards the end here. And one of the bullet points that Brandon talked about was prioritizing now over the future while still spending or saving for both. So did this did this hit you in any way? Like, were you already kind of doing it through travel and you're like, this is important and I'm doing this?
I feel like I'm doing that. I mean, isn't that kind of the idea of slow-fi, right? Or wait, coast-fi? I get them all confused. No, wait. Slow-fi. Yeah. The idea is that you're kind of like finding a balance so you're not depriving yourself now. Mm-hmm. Isn't that basically what we're saying?
I think so. Yeah.
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 So I feel like while I wasn't necessarily or consciously doing slow-fi, I definitely have tried to find that balance of spending on things that bring me joy, but cutting out all the dumb stuff, you know, and still making really smart financial decisions on the other. Like, I'm still going to shop my cell phone bill and car insurance and homeowners insurance and all those things every year, because I think it's so silly to pay twice as much when the guy down the street is going to, I mean, assuming it's a quality provider, obviously, I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to make sure that I'm still buying a good product, but the people that pay double what I pay for their cell phone bills every month, it's just crazy to me. Like, why would you do that when you can pay half that at T-Mobile or whatever it is? Just not that that's the case, but those kind of examples. So I still am going to do that, but I don't know. Definitely spending on the things that bring me joy and cutting out what I call the dumb stuff. And to me, that's some of the dumb stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I agree with you, as you mentioned, like people just slowing down a little bit and they're like, they could take some bigger trips. They don't have to eat the cheapest food. That's one where I was never super cheap on the food side, but when I would hear people talk about like, oh yeah, I got the cost per meal down to this certain amount. I'm like, you're focusing on the wrong part maybe, but people get really caught up in the dollars saved constantly. And again, we're moving away from it. And if you really enjoy making cheap food, then you can keep doing it. That's totally fine. Yeah. But I'm like, I will get way more expensive cuts of meat and stuff like that. That said, that this is an area where I still will like look to save like meaningless dollars. And I'm getting better at it. But like whenever I'm looking at meat, I did it just yesterday. I was like, oh, should I get this cut or that cut? And I was like, oh, how much is this per pound or whatever? Like, which is a better value? And it was irrelevant. And I was just like, I got the one that would work out better in whatever I was making that day.
We're working on my health. I am now trying to buy grass-fed meat, which costs a lot more. But I will tell you what, if that stuff is on sale, you better believe I'm buying three and putting the other two in the freezer.
Yes, I do get the grass-fed beef, actually making chili today. Again, snowy day here. Yum. So we've got some chili going. Yeah, it is a lot more expensive, but occasionally I do see it on sale and I'll buy like whatever, 15 pounds of it or whatever, whatever is on sale. I'll just buy it all and freeze it. It does a really good job. Where do you do your shopping?
Where? Mm-hmm. Well, Schnucks. Have you ever heard of Schnucks?
I have not.
It was weird when I moved to St. Louis because there's two main grocery stores and they're both families that run them. So it's Schnucks and Deerberg's, and they're both like, that's the family name. There's no Kroger, there's no Publix, and it made me kind of crazy and I felt like it was all more expensive, but it's just how it is here. I don't understand how it came to be that way, but there are no big giant like national chains here. I take that back. There's a couple of Aldi here.
Okay. And some people really love Aldi. They're not around here in Colorado. Interesting. Do you do Costco or Sam's? Any big box?
I do have a Sam's membership. I don't go there very often. I probably should. And now that I'm eating more like organic and better cuts of meat, I probably need to revisit that and go over there and see what sort of things that they have I guess I'd found in the past that there wasn't necessarily better quality, but I haven't looked in a while. My membership is free through my brother. So if I was paying for it, I probably would be better about this.
Oh, right. Yeah. I actually like Sam's more than Costco. I know it's probably controversial with many folks because people love Costco for some reason, but the Sam's app, they have an app and you could scan your items as you're going through the store and then you don't have to wait in the huge giant line at
Costco. They have really good quality stuff, like a lot of organic and grass-fed and pastured eggs and things like that?
Yeah. It's, I mean, if you go walk into like a Sam's and a Costco and like, look, you're probably most of the time you're like, oh, this is almost exactly the same. So yeah, I get grass-fed beef
and
organic Brussels sprouts is a go-to, asparagus, of course. But yeah, they have a handful. they have a handful of like decent organic options. And then, like I said, the grass-fed ground beef. Are you getting like grass-fed steaks and stuff? They don't have
that.
No,
I don't really cook a lot of steaks.
Okay. But yeah, they have good options. And as I go through, I'm like, oh, I like the grass-fed beef at Sam's better than whatever I can find at Costco. So, but everybody's, a lot of people, they just think Costco is the best, but they haven't gone into Sam's to check it out. Again, the app is great. And I found the service at least my Costco around here, pretty poor. Like maybe they had some trouble when they first opened.
It just depends on location. Like for me, there's a Sam's that's really close and the Costco is going to be much further. And that was kind of, and also I get it free through my brother. So it's just dependent. You know, interesting that you said that, because I just got a notification that Cherie is approaching with your order from Schnucks. Got some grass-fed beef on the way. I would normally not pay for delivery, but with that whole credit card game, there's several of them that give you, it gives me like $10 off my DoorDash twice a month, and DoorDash picks up groceries now. So I do my grocery order through Schnucks on DoorDash, and then they give me $10 off, which offsets the tip, and they give me free delivery. So I'm like, and it's gross outside. There's like snow and ice everywhere. I'm like,
yeah, totally.
Cherie wants to do it. I'll let Cherie do it.
yeah. That's good. All right. As we wrap up, I'm going to give one more kind of travel related, but we're talking about spending, and one of the great things to spend money on is like experiences. I think we didn't even talk about that, but like,
Definitely. That's
kind of, we know it. So I didn't mention it earlier. Experiences are great when you're hanging out with friends or family. One thing that we did last summer, I think we're going to do more of this. We rented a house and my sisters and their families came to visit us, and we just covered all the expenses for the house. So I think they were like, oh, what do we owe you? And we're like, don't worry about it. And that was, you know, represented a huge savings for them. And I was like, oh, it's in our, like, basically it's in our budget. Like, this is totally fine. We can get a place that costs whatever, $3,000, and it's totally fine. So
nice.
That has been awesome. And then everybody has their own space and we get a place big enough where everybody stays out of each other's way, but there's a place to hang out. So that has been really cool. And just like spending a little more on travel when it means you get to hang out with your friends or family.
Totally. I'm all about that. Just the stuff that makes you happy, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, and experiences, you know, in the book, he talks about the Die With Zero book, he talks about memory dividends. It's the experiences that 10, 20 years from now that you really remember that still bring you that joy looking back on them, as opposed to the $1,000 handbag that's now 20 years old and falling apart.
Right. Yeah. Very good. So I think we wrapped it up pretty well. Do you have any other parting thoughts?
No, I think we covered it really good as well. Thanks again for having me on. I really enjoy this.
Thanks for hanging out. And we have a sound check coming up. And, you know, I do the sound checks because occasionally something's wrong. And this sound check that you will hear, something was a little bit wrong. So you'll hear you'll hear a little bit more echo out there. But, I mean, it's still totally fine. But hopefully everyone appreciates the extra time that we put into it. It was totally fine. Totally fine. People wouldn't even notice. But yeah, we're pros. You're a broadcast professional. So we got to make sure.
But I have
sure
the people behind the scenes that do that kind of stuff, right? I'm the talker, right? But I have somebody behind the scenes pushing all the buttons and making me sound good. So when I'm here by myself trying to make myself sound good, things happen sometimes.
Very good. All right. So people should go to your website, which will link up, fivefriendstravel.com, right?
That's it.
And sign up for the email list. And yeah, we'll talk soon. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Five podcast, and I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do three things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week. Many people have heard the story of how we met, and it was through a rant of, really it was me, I was talking bad stuff about the weather industry. But we just had a snowstorm come through. It's actually still snowing outside, so I had to go out and shovel and stuff like that. And over the last couple of days, we were traveling, so we drove from Atlanta back to Denver, and we took a route that was a little more to the south, just because we thought, it seems like a nice drive. We'll go through Memphis. We'll stop in Wichita. And it seems like it'll be a little bit faster, even though maybe the mileage is a little bit longer, but it takes you out of some large metro areas. Turns out there was a weather system going through your neck of the woods. And this will date the thing, but this happens all the time in your industry. So what's been going on?
This one was particularly frustrating because my forecast for the metro area was like 2 to 4 inches. But, you know, when we drew our map, we showed a band of 4 to 6 or more, like just north. And that band ended up dropping further south into our area. Now, look, it's like 25, 30 miles. But because we got, you know, I said 2 to 4 and instead we got 6, we're pieces of crap and we don't know what we're doing and we should get fired and you should. The heat that we got is incredible. And here's what kills me. They're like, you blew that forecast. Blew the forecast. We told these people 5 days in advance that an accumulating snow was coming. We told them exactly when it was going to start. Nailed that. Told them exactly when it was going to end. Nailed that. But because the higher snow band was like 25 to 30 miles further south, and we got a couple extra inches, we should all lose our jobs. So it's been, it's been a challenging few days. We got another one the other day, 2 days later, that MoDOT, that's the transportation department, they kind of forgot to clear the roads. They forgot to pre-treat the roads.
They kind of forgot.
In all fairness, it came in 2 or 3 hours early and they were just going to start treating the roads, I guess, like right as it started or something, which makes no sense because it wasn't going to rain and wash the stuff off the roads. Why didn't they just do it that morning when they got to work? They were planning on starting at noon. Well, guess what? The snow started at noon. And you would not believe, oh my gosh, there were thousands of accidents. People took 3, 4, 5 hours to get home from work, which would normally be a 20-minute commute. I mean, the whole St. Louis Metro traffic map was just red, blocked. I had an appointment that afternoon. I called and I was like, yeah, I don't think I'm coming in. I didn't leave my house. But it was such a disaster. Now, of course, we get blamed for that too. In all fairness, MoDOT is taking a little bit of heat for that though. It's tough. But hear me as I say to you, the fact that we can predict these things days in advance and even tell you, here's when we blew it. When we say it's going to be sunny in 50 and then it snows, okay, we blew that forecast. But come on. You know, yeah. A couple hours here and there. We're talking about a storm that was thousands of miles out in the Pacific Ocean that we told you it was going to snow days in advance. Can we get a little bit of credit? Just a little, maybe?
Yeah. And even I can recognize the unfairness in that one. The thing is, I mean, well, I'm lucky. A lot of people work from home now. So you do have the option. Some people, not everyone, but some people can just be like, oh, it's going to snow. I don't know exactly when, but we know it's going to snow. And then you could, you know, make plans around it.
Exactly.
Or just know exactly. It's going to take you forever. And I think it was 2011, the snowpocalypse situation in Atlanta. Do you remember that?
Not really.
So luckily, again, I worked from home, so we didn't know how serious it was. But basically, I think we knew it was going to snow.
Wait, I have a quick question. How many inches makes a snowpocalypse in Atlanta? Like two?
I think it was like half an inch.
Oh my God.
It was almost nothing. But I'm pretty sure the issue was they didn't cancel school or other things. And then they sent basically everyone home all at this. They realized, oh, it's starting to snow. Send everyone home all at the same time around
noon. In the middle of it.
So, and it potentially would have been kind of okay if they staggered it. Because, I mean, you can drive a little bit in snow before it gets icy and that sort of thing. But anyway, the point being, they sent everyone on the highways immediately. And as I just got back from Atlanta, I mean, people talk about it. It's really rough. It's very stressful. Everything takes forever to get to. Yeah, so people were stranded on the highway. They were like leaving their cars. I think I had a friend. I mean, it would take like 3 hours to go like half a mile. I think they got out of their car and just like walked home in the snow. So, and they weren't, I mean, they don't have like snow boots or anything like that. They're like walking in their dress shoes home or whatever. So
I'm ready to move. I'm like, send me somewhere warm. I cannot deal with this. I should also mention that typically at this point in the season, on average, we've had an inch of snow. And it's early December, by the way. We've already had 10. So it's just been, like, if this is a sign of seeing things to come, oh dear, I'm not going to make it through this season. And the whole, like, what's the long range forecast look like? That's such a crapshoot. It really is. It just, people ask me, I'm like, oh, what's the rest of the winter going to be like? Let me tell you about the next 5 days. You know?
Good luck on those too.
Yeah.